Okay, I'm a child of the 70s, and I think on days like this, with Lori Lightfoot getting historically trashed in the elections, the first incumbent to be bounced out of office in the first round, I think of Cat Stevens, and I think of the song Morning Has Broken. Morning has broken. And it's so lovely, and there's meadows, and you think of birds and Thumper, the little bunny rabbit Thumper, before the hunters come. And that's how it is. Lori Lightfoot is not mayor of Chicago, and she has done with public life as far as the public is concerned. She didn't even break what she got the last time around. And so, why? Because she lost the confidence of the people in Chicago. I was backing her. Jeff Carlin was back there. She used to show up on this podcast. We'd show up and give hugs. And I know that really pisses off the Jacobins, literally, of the Chicago Tribune. Like, how dare you be friends with her? Yeah, well, I might have been friends with her, but I'm not carrying water for her or Brandon Johnson, like so many do there in the Chicago media. So what happened? Well, the George Floyd riots happened. She was a meme queen. They were calling her superhero because she was on MSNBC and she was all over TV, and MSNBC, leftist MSNBC, made her into some sort of little hero. All she needed was boots and a cape. And then George Floyd happened. And like many liberal mayors who were weak, she allowed herself to be destroyed by the left. You know who didn't leave fingerprints on her corpse? Tony Preckwinkle, Boss Tony, who got her revenge in a dish best served cold. Lori Lightfoot came up with the idea of trying to appease Tony Preckwinkle and tried to endorsed Kim Fox for re-election, State's Attorney Kim Fox, the Soros meat puppet of Cook County prosecutors. And I'm sorry, but when she did that, I called her and I said, "You know, you can't be serious, Lori." And she's like, "Yeah, I have to get Tony Preckwinkle off my back." Well, she got Tony Preckwinkle off her back because she caved and seemed weak. And once you show weakness in this game of politics, it's like basically cutting yourself in front of a pack of hyenas. It's serious when it's an individual. But when that individual is the mayor of Chicago and puts her own city under her own knowledge, knows that if she backs this person, Kim Fox, it will be like telling the city of Chicago, get the bleep out. Well, that's what she did. She left a message to everyone, get the bleep out. She caved to the Black Lives Matter rioters. Oh, yeah, the Tribune doesn't admit that there were riots, but there were riots. I think there were riots, right? All those storefronts destroyed, all those fires, the city of Chicago downtown ripped apart by a mob and successive mobs. And all that happened, and people didn't forget. You know, people haven't forgotten. That's what happens when there's no public order. That's what happens when there's no public safety. Lori Lightfoot caved into all that. And now Brandon Johnson is running, and he's going to pretend that he never called for the defunding of police, but he did. He's on record. Lori Lightfoot even pointed him out. And it's all going to be so ugly. He will play racial politics. I guarantee it, because I know what the left does. They're already wrapping Harold Washington's mantle around this man. I'm sure he could be a very nice man. I don't know him that well. But I'm just telling you how the politics are going to go. And if everything becomes you've got to vote race, or if you're white, you got to vote white, and if you're black, you got to vote black, where do the Latinos go? Because here's one thing that people don't want to deal with. Progressive Latinos may go with a progressive black candidate, but that's party affiliation overriding ethnic politics. In Chicago, I don't think they're too enthusiastic about going Latinos are not enthusiastic about going for a black candidate. They feel that they're in third place and stuck there. And black people think, in to a large measure, in terms of the racial politics, that they don't want to be put behind Latinos. And Latinos are in third place, and they're like, where's ours? When's our turn? And Chewy didn't give it to them. It's all going to be quite ugly. And the bottom line, where are you in all this? Where are you with the city that you love tearing itself apart, with broken media, leftist media throughout the mainstream media? It's all leftist. It's all predisposed. They all want to suck up to Brendan Johnson. You can hear it now in the narrative subtly. But, you know, I've been doing this job for about, 40 years? So I know exactly how it's going. I can sniff it. I can smell it. And even in the dark, you can see what's going on. You can sense what's happening. It's going to be ugly. But do you protect the city or do you just walk away? Because the battle hasn't ended. It'll continue. If Vallis is to prevail, he's got to go after crime and crime and crime and not be dissuaded by Johnson trying to switch him to another, you know, issue like education. Crime is the issue. It's the most pressing issue. And you have to think about it and where you are as the city trembles, as the city decides whether it's going to save itself. You're on the Chicago Way podcast with John Cass, Jeff Carlin, and today, Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates, one of the best political analysts in town.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand with pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
As promised, joining us, Tom Serafin of Serafin & Associates, a consultant and an on-air analyst for Fox 32 Chicago, and my friend. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, big guy. How are you?
I'm good. What a night. Before we dive into what's next, I think we'll probably look at a little bit of what happened. I mean, some people were expecting this race to maybe not be called until maybe a couple days from now, but it was overwhelmingly not Lori Lightfoot and was impressively Paul Vallis' night. And of course, Brendan Johnson, too, coming in second there. Paul, you've seen the numbers. You've been kind of talking about doing the rounds. What's your takeaway from last night?
I thought Paul Vallis did a nice job. You know, the last couple of weeks, people have known that he was going to be coming out on top. I was very, very disappointed in the fact that 1.5 million voters in the city of Chicago, everybody always complains about their government and not being responsive. Yeah, the voters were not responsive. 1,100,000 voters did not vote yesterday. And if they want to make change effective, they want to improve the city, you know, they're going to have to be participants. If they're not participants, city's not going anywhere. So, I mean, the same turnout that we've had in the last two elections, 32-34%. I think, you know, Rahm's election of maybe 40%. That's not enough. You're going to have more participation on the behalf of the voter. I thought Brendan Johnson did exactly what they expected to do. 20% gets you into the runoff. I'm sure that Mayor Lightfoot is disappointed that she wasn't able to do any more. But you know what? You know, you had Chewy in there with the progressive vote. You had Brendan Johnson with the progressive vote. And Lori Lightfoot started, you know, her candidacy, you know, 4 years ago in kind of a progressive way. And she became more conservative as the years grew. And she could not reclaim any of her constituencies from her general election against Tony Preckwinkle when she, you know, won every ward.
Well, she beat Tony Preckwinkle, Tom, but she did not in every ward. But then she caved to Tony Preckwinkle by endorsing Kim Fox, state's attorney, when Tony Preckwinkle demanded it. And it was like a kissing of the ring, and people who understood saw that, and many of us just turned away.
I was surprised, I was surprised that she endorsed Kim Fox, and I expected something in return from the state's attorney or from the president of the Cook County Board, the chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party, you know, Tony Preckwinkle.
Right.
But unfortunately for Mayor Lightfoot, it wasn't there, you know. Yeah. It wasn't there. I mean, Brandon Johnson was obviously a student of the chairman, the president of the Cook County Board, and he's also, you know, on the payroll of the Teachers Union. I mean, he is doing exactly what he's supposed to do, and you know, he's young, energetic, attractive, not afraid to throw a punch. He did last night when he was speaking before everybody on election night victory. And he set the tone for the election campaign, and Paul Vallis is going to have to respond. And if Paul Vallis is always responding and reacting to what Brandon Johnson is doing, he's not going to be successful. He's got to be successful by setting the agenda and the narrative. And I expect him to do that if he wants to be successful.
But how do you set the narrative or not respond to someone else when that person is ideologically in tune with most or all of Chicago media? I mean, not that they want to defund the police, but I would say that most reporters in town, particularly those who are, you know, in the guilds, various unions, want to keep the progressive left happy, or at least supportive of them. And so I don't see how Paul can withstand the combined pressure of the unions and the progressive media. I don't see how that works out.
Well, you know, the progressive media, the press corps, the radio, TV stations, the newspaper reporters, the bloggers, those are all constituencies today. They're no longer, you know, like they were when, you know, I was working the street all the time, you know, working, you know, and talking to people and judging what's going on the street. These people that are involved in all these various different, you know, organizations are just another constituency in a campaign environment. So you've got people in the neighborhoods. You've got people along the lakefront. You got people in outlying wards. You've got a huge population in the inner city that needs help. You've got the constituencies of the media and the variety of bloggers, et cetera. So, you know, when you plan a campaign, you deal with the messaging and all the constituencies that need that messaging. And you try to, you know, adapt the words and language, maintaining consistency in your message, but adapting to the language of the geographies that you're campaigning. And so, I, you know, the progressive media to me, they're always going to be there, and you just deal with them as a constituency. You know, if you're concerned about what they say and how they're reporting the campaign, you're going to be distracted. You can't be distracted. And you have a campaign put together to handle and to message all the various different, you know, folks and people in different organizations, and you just deal with it. So I understand what you're saying, but nowadays, you know, everybody in the media is got an opinion. Everything is written with an opinion. Even the news stories have opinion inside the news story. So you go to work every day with your eyes wide open. And it's better that way, actually, because everything's out front. Everybody knows where everybody's coming from. Everybody knows what a reporter is thinking. And you just move forward and you campaign on your message. But if the other side is throwing junk at you, you have to be able to destroy that junk and put the other side on the defensive. And if I were Paul Vallis, I mean, yeah, Brennan Johnson had plenty of time in the primary to talk about why he really didn't mean defund the police. Right. But he said that many times. He never said that. He wants to defund the police, and he's still talking about not retracting that statement.
Yeah,
he also wants to raise taxes. You know, he also has to defend our Chicago school system that, you know, in the latest statewide test scores, 80% of people in eighth grade are graduating, can't read at the eighth grade level. 85% can't do math at the eighth grade level. Okay, what are you going to do for the city? You know, we need people that live and work in the city need the Chicago public schools to create a workforce, an educated workforce to build this city. We have to do it internally. We have to rebuild our schools. We have to rebuild our neighborhoods, and we need our students and children to be the future workers for the city of Chicago.
Otherwise, there's no city.
That's the one of the things that Brandon Johnson is doing really well. He's very disciplined. I mean, he's very good at not falling for traps and not getting into these battles about what he said and what he might have said and what he meant. He's just good. And then he doesn't get the pushback, John, as you were talking about, from the media, who says, well, he said he didn't mean it, or he whatever it is, they just push past it. I think one of the things that works in Paul's point, to your point, Tom, is that this idea of a workforce. I mean, one of the big staples of Johnson's economic plan is to start taxing people who are coming into the city to work at a higher rate. Well, you know, people can work from home now. Businesses can work wherever they want now. So why would any business owner in the city support Brandon Johnson if he's just going to make life for them harder? And I think Paul can certainly run on that. And Paul needs to get out there and show his, you know, his progressive bona fides, if you will, because he is, you know, a guy who has always been the idea that, you know, every person's life needs to be made better, no matter what. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, what color, creed, whatever it is, your life deserve happiness and the pursuit of happiness. And he needs to run on that, because, I mean, he's got that stuff in his background. But Paul, this morning, or Tom, this morning, I was seeing that people are still running this line that, well, Paul Vallis is a far right candidate. He's a far right candidate. He's a far right candidate. Well, if we live in a city where Paul Vallis is a far right candidate, then we are way beyond the pale on the other side of things, because he's not. How does he overcome that?
He's got to get out of the box. He's got a campaign in the inner city of the neighborhoods. He's got to be talking to people. He's got to have that echo chamber. He's got to get people in the neighborhoods of significance to endorse him. You know, there are a lot of other candidates that ran for mayor. Mm-hmm. You know, three or four should be endorsing him in the next week or two. Sure. He's got to show that he has that gravitas inside the city, and he understands what the city is and how the city needs to be handled. In debates, you're going to have to call people out and, you know, push them and pressure them. If you're waiting for the media or the old fashioned media or the traditional media to do it, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
You mean that if you're waiting for the Chicago Tribune to actually be the Chicago Tribune that it was just a few years ago, you're not going to find it.
You can't rely on any person or organization involved in the election process to carry your message. You got to carry it, and you've got to push it and push it on a daily basis. Brandon Johnson does a real nice job of pushing his message. He was up early this morning. Yeah, he made all the television stations early when people were still at home having breakfast. Before 8 o'clock. I didn't see the other candidate out there. Maybe the Paul Vallis was out there. I didn't see him. So Brandon Johnson is going to be running, 724 in his thing. And let me tell you something. SEIU, the teachers union, AFSCME, the public employee unions that are behind him are very, very sophisticated when it comes to running campaigns. They are no slouches. They understand what it takes. They understand where the buttons need to be pushed, and they're experienced. And he's got a very experienced group of people around him. This is going to be a Donnybrook. The election, the people started early voting in 19 days, three weeks.
How ugly is it going to get, guys?
Well, it doesn't need to get very ugly, because there are real simple distinctions between the two candidacies, and you need to stress that. And there's nothing wrong with somebody who wants to defund the police. I mean, and somebody that wants to take care of, public safety the way, Paul Vallis talks about. Those are all issues that need to be debated, and there's nothing wrong with that. What they're going to try to do, though, is I don't know what Paul Vallis is going to do with Brendan Johnson, but Brendan Johnson started, you know, on election night talking about the fact that people that are supporting Paul Vallis could be construed as insurrectionists. Yeah. I mean, they're going to try to put people in a box.
Yes.
And you have to push back on that. And you don't necessarily use the candidate's voice, but you use those folks around the candidate that will be able to say, hey, we understand what's going on. We understand, you know, he's doing this, throwing this rhetoric out there, but that's just rhetoric. He is going to be, who's going to have a plan for the city? Right now, Brendan Johnson's got a plan. He articulates it pretty well. He's well rehearsed. He's charismatic, and he's coming out of the box early. And I've been impressed with his ability. Paul needs to show the same thing. Paul Vallis needs to show the same thing immediately and get out there and kick some butt. If he doesn't, you know, it's going to be a long 4 or 5 weeks for him.
Well, we're going to have a long several weeks regardless. And I think you've got the hidden issue, or let's say under the carpet issue, of Chicago Teachers Union Local 1, the most powerful and most politically left union in the political universe. And they're raising money and they're giving money to Brendan Johnson. So they're going to, what, are they going to govern? How is it going to work out if he's elected? CTU is going to be running the city, or will they have an office in City Hall? How's it going to work?
That's a good point, John. I mean, that's one of the things that I think Paul can hone in on, is the idea that, look, Brendan Johnson is going to be out there campaigning on our dime because he's being paid by our tax dollars. And he's not working. I mean, if he's campaigning, he's not working, right? And so this idea that he's drawing a big salary from the county and drawing a salary from the union just reeks of the idea that the fix is in, and that if he becomes mayor, then, you know, who is controlling everything? It's all power consolidated in one place, in one group of people led by a handful of people. That's something that Paul can hopefully use to his advantage. And I think it's something that would resonate with a lot of people, because, you know, the idea of big government or the conspiracy type thing, those things play well on social media. Those things play well in, you know, in gossip groups. But I think you were onto something there, Tom, with the idea that Paul needs endorsements. And just looking at, just obviously this is for fun here, but the idea of Paul, you know, pulling away with it, coming in with what, 34% of the vote in this part of the election, and Johnson behind him at like 20%. You know, if we break up the remaining candidates there, it still stacks up in Paul's favor if he gets an endorsement from the likes of a Sawyer or a Willie Wilson, and even probably not a Lightfoot, but it's going to be people vying for that Lightfoot Chewy Garcia vote that's probably going to go to Johnson. It still becomes a really, really tight race that I think Paul has a chance to win. Do you see any a larger outcome from this from business types here? Because I feel like they'd be in Paul's corner.
Well, you know, when you talk about the business community, you're accurate there. The business community have thrown up their hands. You know, they got whacked in the Pritzker gubernatorial election, working with Citadel and everybody else, you know, when they lost their primary. So there are a few of them that are still kicking. And in the business community, you know, I spoke to somebody last night about it, and he told me, we're all in and we're going to be with Paul Vallis. We just need the city to settle down and have somebody that we can talk to that's not going to completely always put us in on the defensive as if we're doing something wrong. So from a business community point of view, Paul Vallis will be able to raise a good deal of money. Resources for either candidacy, for Brendan or Paul Vallis's candidacy, will not be a problem in this particular 5 week election. Money won't be the issue. The issue will, can you talk about your issue, and can you convince the voters in the city of Chicago, who, by by the very fact that they don't vote anymore, are fed up and given up on people downtown trying to solve their problems. The reason a million people didn't vote is because nothing ever changes. This same group of people take over City Hall, they make all the promises, and nothing ever changes. So this is an election where a lot of people think might be the last great opportunity to try to right the ship here in the city of Chicago, especially for those people that provide thousands of jobs in the city and people that provide thousands of millions of dollars in tax revenue. In Michigan Avenue, if you take a look at the boarded up buildings, that particular part of the world in Chicago, I think at one time produced 23-25% of the tax income for the city. It's not doing that anymore. You have to bring that back, and you can't do that with rhetoric suggesting that because they're supporting Paul Vallis that they're insurrections. Right. Those people, they can afford to push a few buttons to move their assets to Florida, Tennessee, Texas, as many of them have already done. You have to bring peace. You have to talk to people. You have to compromise.
I guess the question is, does whoever, Vallis or Johnson, do they want to preside over, at the end of the election, do they want to preside over a city that's not doing well at all? Or do they want to preside over a city that is shaky? Or is it one with a green living trunk? You know, I don't know.
I think, John, the both candidacies and their constituencies are earnest. I think that's the term, earnest in trying to bring their vision to the city. And they think their vision for the city will be able to turn it around. You know, and you have clearly different visions about how to do that. You know, the people that voted for Brendan Johnson, you know, 89% of the people said they were voting for Brendan Johnson because he was going to help solve the homeless issue. He was going to be able to improve the schools and improve the CTA. Only 62% of them said in the polling that they were there to improve safety. So with Paul Vallis, 99% of the people that voted for him said it was because they wanted to improve safety. They wanted to deal with the crime issue. Clear distinctions on why voters voted for each different candidacy. If this election in the next 5 weeks is about crime and improving safety, Paul Vallis would be able to sell that message. He would have an advantage at the ballot box. If it's the other way around, he has a disadvantage and Brendan Johnson has the advantage. Which message is going to resonate with the voters? I think crime and improving public safety will resonate. Can Paul sell that and punch back when he needs to? Will his campaign be as sophisticated as Brendan Johnson's campaign? And please respect Brendan Johnson's campaign effort and his people around him. Very sophisticated, very wise. They know what they're doing, and to think otherwise would be a fatal error on the part of Paul Vallis' campaign.
If he sticks to crime and public safety, he has a chance to win. If he doesn't, if he's allowed himself to be distracted, I don't think he will win. And what'll happen then is all those business people that wanted to support him, they will turn out the lights, and you will see it, an acceleration of the decline faster than you could imagine, just in a period of weeks. And at the same time, as we get warmer, things get warmer outside, you know, in the spring, nice days. What happens in Chicago? The bodies hit the floor. It's a terrible thing.
The good thing about this race is it will provide clarity for everyone who wants to live in the city of Chicago and do business in the city of Chicago,
right,
and get their kids into public school in the city of Chicago and educate them so that they can get onto a trade or, you know, junior college or, you know, a regular college, and come back to the city and be part of the opportunity that the city creates for everybody that lives here over the last 100 years. There's clearness and clarity. on the outcome. And, you know, it's been a long time since we've had a race that's going to show us that clarity. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's, you know, Brandon Johnson wins, everybody's going to know where the city's headed. If Paul Vallis wins, everybody's going to know where the city's headed. And, you know, the one thing people have mentioned to me about Paul Vallis, especially some of the aldermen, you know, at City Hall, is that, you know, Tom, he's 70 years old. So he's only going to be around 4 or 8 years. So he's not going to be like a daily. He's not going to be one of these long-term mayors that we cannot dislodge. He's going to go in there and fix things. And then he's either going to retire or somebody will beat him in office in 4 or 8 years. You know, in my lifetime, there have only been two mayors that haven't had a second term, Mayor Jane Byrne and Mayor Lori Lightfoot. So the opportunity is with him. And think about this. The next mayor has control of about $29 billion in total resources. If you take the schools and everything else that the mayor has opportunity to deal with, $29 billion, round that off to 30, multiplied times four, that's $120 billion in 4 years. And if it's a two-term mayor, that's $250 billion that the mayor can deal with over 8 years. Somebody who understands the books, somebody who can put an accounting operation together, can see what can I do with an investment of $250 billion in the city of Chicago that's focused on the city, you know, alleviating the debt, taking care of the pensions in the neighborhoods, and improving public safety. Could I do that with $250 billion? I think, you know, an imbecile could probably do it that way. I know one of the candidates, you know, that was in the forums in the primary told Paul Vallis, he said, you know what I'm going to do, Paul, after I get elected? Paul said, no, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to elect you, Paul, to run the city.
Right.
Yeah, because everybody knows that Paul understands the numbers that he can deal with it. Yeah. The problem with Paul Vallis has always been that he's never been able to win an election. So, you know, Brandon Johnson's got his people together. Paul Vallis has got his people together. It's a major league's heavyweight fight. And
you, know what?
You have to get out.
Yeah. You have to get out and do it. And the honesty of this election, as you point out, is clarity. And when I saw Stacey Davis Gates standing there doing interviews, you know, in front of Brandon Johnson, basically planting the union flag on his candidacy, I thought, okay, here it is. And let the people decide. That's it, right?
Yeah, we're certainly at a crossroads, that's for sure.
You know, it's a shame, you know, that, you know, when you take a look at the numbers now, only 16% of the city of Chicago would be classified as middle class. The rest of this poverty, and then the few people that, you know, have money. But it's there's a large segment of the city that lives in, you know, what is currently described by the federal government as poverty conditions. And our schools are not performing. Our police department needs to be rehabilitated. So much that needs to get done, and you can't do it without compromise. It's not going to get done. Lori Lightfoot tried to do it with a hammer, and she wasn't reelected. You have to do, Rahm Emanuel tried to do it with a hammer. He had to leave office. You have to bring people together, and you have to understand this city. And we're going to see the clarity is going to be right there for all of us.
What about the last question before we go? What about the ugly thing that people don't want to acknowledge or feel they're too polite to acknowledge, or they remember the early years of Harold Washington and CORE and all these different do-gooder groups? What about voting skin color? What about Chicago as the city of tribes that I grew up in, that I understand the pink guys, the Lithuanians, the Latinos, blacks, Greeks, I don't know what Greeks are, kind of like olives. What about people voting skin color? Isn't that what it's going to come down to, unfortunately? I mean, I feel somehow, I don't like it, but I feel somehow that people will vote skin color above all else. And I don't know how to reconcile that, especially during Lent.
Well, in the last couple of weeks, you know, the mayor, you know, did make some overt remarks about, you know, if you don't vote for me, you know, you should stay home, those kinds of things. And Brandon Johnson on his election night speech alluded to some of that. But I think the voters in Chicago are so much more sophisticated. And in my lifetime, you know, Paul Vallis is the first person, you know, of that is a Caucasian that is welcomed and freely moves around the communities of color, whether it's Hispanic, you know, African American, Asian, it makes no difference. He did so well when he was here with the Chicago Public Schools in moving around with the various constituencies in the community. And so, you know, they're trying to make him a Republican as they talked about on election night. They're trying to, and if you can make him a Republican, then you can attach all the Trump kind of doctrines and rhetoric to him.
If you equate his skin color and you get away with this racism and you say he's white, he's a moderate, therefore he's a conservative and a Republican, and that's racism. But if you get away with it, the reason why you'd get away with it is because media will reinforce that message.
Yeah, but the media is not in control. They're going to, you know, they write stuff, but they're a constituency because they're opinionated. So, you can't look at the media as if they're going to be an arbiter of intelligence or truth anymore. They are just expressing their point of view based on how they see things. And that doesn't make them right, doesn't make them wrong. They're no longer, in the old days, they were the sitting in judgment all the time of who was right and who was wrong. And unfortunately today on the esteem ladder for people all around the country, including the city of Chicago and the state of Illinois, they are down on the bottom along with politicians.
Right.
They're important. They're an important constituency that you need to respect, but they aren't the driving constituency anymore in a campaign. And if you allow them to drive the campaign, you're not going to be successful. You're going to be you get obsessed with that, and they're just going to derail you along the way. It's no longer the case when you're running an election anymore. They are just another constituency that you have to deal with, and you work with them. You know, as far as the election cycle is going to concern, and whether or not race is going to be a big play. You know, there's a lot of African American mothers and women that would love to have their opportunity to send their child to a school where their children will be able to graduate and get onto a good high school and find a good job somewhere. Right. One of those issues, you know, that Paul's talked about for years is parental school choice, where the parents has the opportunity to choose the school for their child. That's an issue that, you know, Brandon Johnson's going to go after him on. And I think that's a good issue, especially for people in the neighborhoods that are trapped. They are trapped in schools that don't perform. This is an opportunity. It's a wave around the country that's currently moving. And, you know, it's going to be one of those sidebar issues that's going to come right to the top. The teachers union versus parental school choice. It's a national issue. Don't forget, you know, this is going to be a national campaign. Wall Street Journal wrote about it on Wednesday morning about this particular election immediately. Everybody's looking at it. AOC and the squad, Bernie and all, everybody else is going to come in and campaign for the teachers union candidate, Mr. Johnson. And Paul, who is an old-fashioned liberal Democrat, is going to be on the other side. Right. How could he be on the other side? You know, so the Democrats themselves are going to have to figure out who's a Democrat and who isn't a Democrat. And they're going to try to go after each other. The school choice, the parental school choice issue is going to be a big issue in this campaign. Number two, along with the crime issue in the city of Chicago, people around the country will be watching this. This will be a national effort.
Wisdom from Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates. Tom?
Well, thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it. And John, I hear you're pretty darn well. Congratulations on coming back from the edge of oblivion. You know, my goodness, you've been through a war and a half. You sound pretty good, buddy. And I saw that column you wrote the other day. Yeah, it was terrific. And we're looking forward to the more from johncassnews.com.
Well, I'm not ready to jump in completely. I did that one because as I told you when we were, I was working on it, you know, it was election day and I had something to say and I had to say it. And I couldn't just hide, but we're going to see, you know, I mean, I'm not ready to write three a week. I'm not ready to do that, but I am ready to talk politics anytime with Tom Serafin and Jeff Carlin.
Absolutely. Tom, always love your insight. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Thank you, John. You guys have a very good day. Stay well.
You too.
Thank you, my friend.
Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing.
All right. For Tom Serafin of Serafin Associates, an analyst on Fox 32 News Chicago, and I'd say the best analyst I know in Illinois. I mean, the stuff he talked about, just brilliant.
A political guru in every sense of the word.
He's a good man. And for Jeff Carlin, my friend and budding media critic. And we'll have to get to that in the Jeff time. Carlin files, because there's several guys I know who used to be who consider themselves, I guess, progressive show ponies in the media, now are whining about the Chicago way, like, oh yeah, why is Jeff and John doing this? It's just pathetic. Grow up, snowflakes. And for me, John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, your favorite website for common sense. Join us again next time as the city decides what it will be. Que sera, sera, on the Chicago way, on WGN+.